Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we'll go to your calls. And again, to reset, we're talking about criminal justice and social justice aspects of marijuana and cannabis all this week on our April series, Reefer Managed. And today, it's simply your stories as we move toward a big expungement debate or sealing of records debate in the New York legislature and the New Jersey legislature as part of any cannabis legalization bill that might get through in either of our states. And we're taking your stories. How has cannabis criminalization or workplace testing impacted your life or that of someone you know? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Kathleen in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kathleen. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You got a story to tell?
Yeah, I had actually, I'm like a user where I just smoke at the end of the day to go to sleep, just last anxiety or whatever, just to get to sleep. And I had been applying for work as an executive assistant, administrative assistant, and it was with this cable company. And I got the job, and then 3 days after I got the job, I think my drug test came in slightly positive, and without, even though I was placed with an agency, the agency wouldn't tell me the reason why I was terminated. Mm-hmm. They were rushing the job higher, higher, higher. And since that time, I've just learned, like, pot just stays in your body for so long, and it's hard to disguise. It's hard to fast. There's all these little tricks. So drink cranberry juice, drink 2 gallons of water. And I've just resorted to using synthetic urine. And I think it's just a scam where there's an industry saying, oh, test your employees. And it doesn't make sense. And currently, I'm an Uber driver. I live in New Jersey. I have a physical, I have a prescription for using mm-hmm. marijuana. But I still have to get tested as the TLC driver.
Right. And even with the law that the city council passed that would ban workplace testing for cannabis in most job categories, it would still allow it for commercial vehicle drivers, which I guess would continue to include you. Do you object to that as a workplace safety, a passenger safety measure?
Well, you know, it's a mixed bag. I mean, I don't want anybody driving under the influence. I don't drive under the influence. I use an Uber if I go out drinking with my friends. And so I have a real problem with that invasion. I think the city council is looking at it like, oh, there's due diligence. I mean, even Uber, like, will tell folks, look, you know, when they were doing their mass hiring, if you use, you're going to get tested, mm-hmm. you know, refrain from that. But it's really hard to predict how long pot is going to stay in your system. And I think it's the more addictive stuff like coke or heroin and all, they don't stay in mm-hmm. your system as long.
Right.
And I find it invasive. I mean, I have an issue with it, but I'm sure that the person, I don't think anybody should be driving under the influence. I'm driving on the road and a car will pass me and I will get just this waft of, like, pot coming in from their exhaust into my car system.
Yeah, and it raises, and Kathleen, I'm going to run and take some other calls, but I appreciate yours, and it really raises this whole set of difficult issues for any legal state having to do with driving while impaired, because there's the breathalyzer test for alcohol, which can pretty much determine the amount that you've been drinking just before you got behind the wheel. There's no such thing for THC because it stays in your system for so long. So they really can't isolate whether somebody's actually driving while high. And so you get caught in that lack of science, I guess you might call it, as an Uber driver, because they probably wouldn't really care that you got high at other times. Like, they don't test people for having drunk alcohol you know, at all in the last 2 weeks, but THC, I think, stays in your system for about 2 weeks, something like that. And so this is a blunt instrument that they use, and it ensnares you in this particular case. It also makes it very tough for law enforcement to figure out when somebody appears to be driving erratically or for whatever reason that they want to drug test somebody, marijuana test somebody in a legalization or even a non-legalization context. But it makes it an unanswered question or an unresolved gray area, at least so far. And Kathleen, thanks for calling. Damani in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Damani.
Hi, Brian. How's it going?
Okay. You got a story for us.
Oh, good, good. So I grew up in the city. I was, I smoked when I was younger. I had, growing up, I didn't realize what it was that drew me to marijuana. But as I got older, through therapy, I realized that I was self-medicating. At the time, I had been through some traumatic experiences living in Brooklyn as a young person of color. I definitely felt targeted. There were times when I was detained amongst a crew of other people that were not of color. And so this had a terrible effect on me psychologically, my relationship with the police, obviously my record. Now I had, I had a police record. I had been fingerprinted. All of this was, before the age of 16. To this day, I still have post-traumatic stress because when like a police pulls up behind me or, I'm walking past an officer, like I could not, be doing, I could be just, listening to my Walkman or whatever, and my heartbeat will go up, my blood pressure rises. And the fact that I have this on my record really prompts employers to ask for that test. And so there was a long time when there were positions that I was completely qualified for and really wanted these great jobs. And through the process of interviewing, found that I had to decline these jobs because mm-hmm. there was a test involved.
A test involved. So you really have a double whammy. You have the criminal record, which is going to make it hard for you with some employers, and then some who are willing to look past that but want to see that you're not currently a marijuana user, then you get ensnared in that, even if you could do the job well.
Yes.
Damani, thank you for your call, and good luck. And it'll be interesting to see in cases like Damani's whether expungement and the sealing of records, which are under consideration in New York and New Jersey, really go through in, a comprehensive way. So that if employers want to look at this from people's pasts, they can't anymore. And that coupled with the ban on workplace testing or testing of prospective employees that the city council just passed this week, and again, there'll be exceptions for public safety jobs and professional drivers and things like that, whether this will have a big impact on equality, because so much of this is aimed at social justice as the bottom line motivation for the whole legalization movement, right? Claire in Bayshore, you're on WNYC. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Brian. I, too, unable to take a job because I smoke pot on a daily basis. I never smoked before work, but I was unable to. I didn't try. I didn't want to pass and fail. But the story I want to tell you, Brian, is about a friend of mine who did a midlife career change in the middle of medical assistance. She went in to become a medical assistant. She passed. She got her certificate. She landed a job in a prominent Long Island hospital. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing about this woman was that she was an alcoholic. She was sober 25 years. She became a vegan. She had a perfect diet. She didn't eat anything unnecessary. She drank, hydrated ridiculously. So with this offer her the job as a medical assistant, she had to take a drug test.
Mm-hmm.
They mistook her diluted urine for trying to hide a drug use scenario. And she was one and done. They would not, you know, give her a second chance. They did not. And she went back to HR and said, listen, I've been sober for 25 years. I'm a vegan. I drink, I hydrate like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not diluting my urine to fool you. And she lost that opportunity. And, you know, when we're in our 60s, Brian, and we're looking for our third careers, you know, and
still,
I don't have any criminal history, neither did she. Like, and she didn't even smoke any weed, but she got discriminated
right.
against due to the workplace testing.
Claire, thank you very much for that story and the story of your friend. Let's see. Mark on the Upper East Side. You're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Brian.
Hi, Mark.
Oh, I'm actually in East Village. Anyway, thanks
Sorry.
For putting me on.
Sorry about that. Hi.
THC is detectable in urine 30 days after ingestion by the urine screening tests that they use.
I said I thought it was about 2 weeks, so you're correcting that and saying it's longer than that. It's about 30 days.
It's 30 days. And then when I was hired by a VA hospital, they gave me a form on the day I was hired saying that in 30 days I would be subject to random testing. So basically what they do at the VA is they give you a form telling you you've got 30 days to clean up your act if you're a pot smoker.
Right, I see. And, you know, the little that I've read about this indicates that it's in that range, and it depends how much you've smoked in a concentrated period of time or anything like that. So a lot of people, it might actually clear in 14 days, but I think they were being, you know, generous might be the wrong word, but trying not to ensnare anybody who had actually stopped on day one of the job by giving it that maximum amount of 30 days. So that's what it sounds like to me.
Well, actually, the half-life of Delta-9 THC in the human body is 30 days. So you're right. If you had a tremendous concentration on day one, you might be detectable on day 30. But it takes about 30 days for half of the THC that's stored in your system to be removed.
Right. And I don't know exactly how much has to be in your system to be detected by a drug test, but that's a good rule of thumb for anybody to whom that might apply for a situation you're applying for. To be safe, says Mark, who sounds like he knows a lot more about this than I do, 30 days. Kevin in Morris Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Brian. Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Go ahead.
In the 70s, I was arrested for possession, very small amount, you know, Bergen County community. In 2015, I applied for a job with a financial institution and was denied because of that record.
Mm-hmm.
I went back, I looked at the record, I said, oh, you're eligible for expungement. I said, okay, great, let me apply for expungement. I was denied expungement.
Do you know why?
The prosecutor was better than my attorney.
Right. And it caught you by surprise that so long after your arrest, this was still following you, right?
Exactly. And I had a, you know, a continuing job history over all those years. I could even pull you know, drug testing that were done for those jobs along the way. None of that mattered.
So you would be a good candidate, I imagine, for a new expungement application if the law actually passes in New Jersey and has that provision, right? You would go right for it?
Probably, yeah. I was told by the judge at the time in 2015 that I could reapply in 5 years, you know.
Yeah.
And, You know, but at this point, it's like, what am I going to do, retire first or get my record?
Right, I understand. But you would, it sounds like you'd really want this for others, though.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, part of the, you know, part of the dilemma for myself is that, you know, yeah, in that time, I would, sure, I could definitely say back in the 70s, even through the 80s and 90s, I abused. But I have been clean and sober for, I don't know, 25, mm-hmm. 30 years or whatever. And I still fall on this. I can see the dangers of it, but I still fall on the side of, you know, legalization to get rid of this ridiculous, you know, penal system approach that we have to something mm-hmm. when we already have, you know, alcohol and other prescribed medications that are considerably even more dangerous.
Kevin, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Kevin, a good example of how criminalization of, if his situation was as he described it, simple possession for a small amount decades ago continues to follow him to this day in the workplace. And Paul in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul. Paul, are you there? Paul in Manhattan.
Can you hear me?
Hi, Paul. Hi. Now we got you. Hi there.
Okay. Yes, I, as I explained to the screener, I have a drinking problem, and I was a cab driver, and got tested, and got dismissed for traces of marijuana in my system, which, and I never drove under the influence of marijuana, but I did drive under the influence of alcohol, and I thought it was ironic that I got dismissed for the marijuana. And in fact, since then, I've eliminated my alcohol problem by more regularly smoking marijuana. That's my story.
Thank you very much. Okay, the irony there of not being alcohol tested, but then being drug tested when he was driving a taxi. Lori in South Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lori.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call. I'll be quick. My son, about a year and a half ago when he was 17, was picked up in the car in South Orange driving around with some friends, and they found not even a joint, a roach, they call it, in my day.
Mm-hmm.
And he was thrown into the jail. We had to get a lawyer. But the worst thing was it went on what's called a police blotter.
Mm-hmm.
And then the local tap into newspaper, like the online newspaper picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now on Google. And you can't really get rid of it. I mean, I called Google. It cost $6,000. And it's basically affecting these really young kids' lives for years. You know, they need to change. The police, the local police, need to realize they just can't put it up on the blotter in the local newspapers. You know, it's not like 1974 when you get arrested, your parents know and your best friend knows. Now every college knows, every job, every internship, it affects your life for years.
And in the digital era, you make a great point that even if the law passes in New Jersey, in your case, in New York, for other people, with expungement or the sealing of records, they don't expunge you from Google.
Exactly. And Google has you tied with your hands behind your back because it costs $6,000 to pay some person who knows about, you know, the Internet and how to do this stuff. So everybody's making money, and you're 17 and 18-year-old, and then suddenly they're 21 and 22, and it's still affecting them.
Lori, thank you for your call, and thanks to all of you for your calls. Very illuminating in many ways, different ways from different ones of you. Thank you so much for sharing your stories of the personal effects on you, of the criminalization of cannabis over the many years, and workplace testing. Again, the news hook for this particular call-in that the New York City Council has approved a cannabis pre-employment testing ban. The ban would prohibit employers in the city from requiring prospective employees from submitting two marijuana tests, except in certain cases having to do with public safety for the most part. So there you go. Thanks, everybody, for calling in on today's edition of Reefer Managed. We continue our three-week series tomorrow with a debate, legalization versus decriminalization. That's on tomorrow's show. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Jake Sherman and Anna Palmer from Politico. They have a really interesting new book about Washington in the Trump era, Congress in particular in the Trump era. And we're also going to talk to them about the breaking news this morning about the arrest of Julian Assange from WikiLeaks. Stay with us.